It's time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the editor and publisher of The Timberjay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, good to have you back.
Oh, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's start with a story you've done that I think affects a lot of people, certainly in your area, but around in sort of tourist areas, this kind of new phenomenon of private vacation home rentals. What are you finding out how it's impacting northeastern Minnesota?
Sure. Well, there's kind of a variety of impacts. Some of them obviously are probably good for the owners of these properties. They're generating income by renting their lake homes or cabins, you know, by the week, sometimes longer than that, sometimes shorter. It's a benefit for those, especially if they have high property taxes to pay, things like that. They're certainly seeing the benefits from it. It's also probably good for folks who are interested in vacationing in our area. It's another option, sometimes maybe a more affordable option, especially if you've got a large group, than maybe going to a resort. Any more choices that you can possibly have, I mean, certainly it's a benefit. But, of course, there's definitely downsides to it and some concern, and that's kind of what we looked at. Well, we decided to look at the story, I guess, because we'd been hearing from people over the last couple of years, really, that this has been increasing concern for some, especially neighbors of some of these properties. And it really varies with the property and depending on who is, you know, managing the property. In some cases, you know, the management firms, if it's being done, you know, by a firm or else if it's being done by the owners themselves, sometimes they do a good job and they make sure that they're getting, you know, the right kind of people in there and that they're getting the word out that how they're supposed to behave while they're there and that they're not getting too many people in. But in some cases, that isn't happening, and you're getting some of these cabins. You might have, I mean, I've heard stories from some of the folks I talked to, you know, of two-bedroom cabins. They get rented by a party, and suddenly it's everybody they know, you know, showing up, and now you'll have a dozen or more people staying there, you know, and they're pitching tents, and they're, you know, sleeping on the living room floor, and, you know, it's just a big party, you know, for a weekend or a week, whatever. And, you know, obviously for folks who are, you know, at the lake, you know, for some peace and quiet in most cases, not exactly what they're looking for. So there have been an increasing number of conflicts, you know, and part of the problem, too, is some of the folks who come to and stay in these areas, they're not sure, you know, where the property lines are. They don't know about what, you know, kind of proper etiquette. People find, you know, in some cases, you know, guests at a neighboring property are enjoying their docks or their decks in some cases, you know. So that obviously creates a little bit of concern there. Resorts, of course, are another area, another group that is affected by these. I did talk to the Lake Vermilion Resort Association to kind of get their take on it. And, you know, obviously these vacation home rentals they're taking away business in some cases potentially from some of the area resorts. The resorts are saying that's fine, except we would like to have a level playing field. They're saying a lot of these vacation home rentals are not necessarily complying with health and safety rules and inspections that resorts are required to comply with, and you know, they're not necessarily paying into local lodging taxes, which, you know, of course, are used to help promote the area. And, you know, one of the issues, too, is, and this has been an issue that the resorts and others have brought to St. Louis County, and, of course, this is an issue that a lot of counties are dealing with right now, and there have been a number of different approaches. A lot of counties now are taking steps to regulate these private vacation rentals. St. Louis County, at this point, has not taken any action. They did have a report done that looked in detail at all the different ramifications of this back in 2015, but the county board just opted to kind of let it sit for now. They were kind of waiting for the city of Duluth to implement some rules, which the city did back in 2016, but it really hasn't come back up on the agenda for the St. Louis County Board since then. So they're still kind of waiting to see what, you know, what kind of push they get as far as whether or not they want to regulate this. Obviously, there's impacts to it. You know, regulation is not necessarily going to be that easy, you know, because a lot of these are happening, you know, just online, or they're private party. It doesn't necessarily even get advertised. So it's tough to sometimes tell, you know, which property is being rented and which isn't. And then, you know, they've talked about, well, do we allow rental for 2 weeks a year before you have to meet all these different rules? Or, you know, is it anybody who rents even for a couple of days? You know, so there's a lot of that kind of discussion going on. I know the Resort Association, they've actually taken kind of an interesting approach. They've decided that when they find out about one of these vacation rentals, they send them actually a constructive, positive letter and, you know, inviting them to, you know, take part in a new association which they've set up, which also includes now these private vacation rentals, and then also encouraging them to begin collecting the lodging tax and talking about some of the other things that they should be doing. And they said in some cases they, you know, get very nice responses, and these people have been joining this other group they've established and are beginning to collect lodging taxes and other things. So that's a positive approach. They're basically trying to just, you know, use education initially as the first step. And that works with probably a lot. In some cases, it doesn't work. And they're told to just bug off. But I think overall, it's certainly a good first step. And then I guess they'll see if this continues to be an issue. I mean, obviously, it's something that's probably going to increase over time. It certainly has been increasing in the last few years. And right now in St. Louis County, the focus of a lot of this activity is on Lake Vermilion, Burnside Lake, the Eagle's Nest Lakes, places like that, you know, the real popular lake areas.
Okay, Marshall, let's move on to another story you've been covering. It has to do with a species I don't think a lot of us know much about, the spruce grouse. What'd you find out?
Yeah, well, you're right. A lot of people don't know much about the spruce grouse, in part because they're often hard to find out in the woods. They tend to inhabit, as you might expect, they inhabit mostly coniferous forests, you know, spruce or also jack pine stands as well. I find them most frequently out in the Lost Lake Swamp near our house, out in some of the mature stands of black spruce. They tend to like that kind of terrain. But, you know, the DNR, they've been trying to get a handle on the population of the spruce grouse, in part because they're worried that, you know, with climate change, they're going to be seeing some shifts and possibly reductions here in Minnesota anyway in the spruce grouse population. But at this point, you know, just getting information on this bird is difficult. You know, they're not nearly as common as the ruffed grouse. They're not very afraid of humans. For many years, they were known as fool's hens, and that's because you could walk right up to them in many cases. You know, they spend a lot of time in trees, which is a little different than rough grouse, which spend a lot of time on the ground. You know, you can walk right by these spruce grouse and they won't flush. And if they're in a, you know, kind of thick woods where they tend to hang out and they're dark in color, it's really easy to miss them. So it's one of those species that can be difficult to study. So it's taken some time for the DNR biologist, Charlotte Roy, who's based in Grand Rapids, to even develop methods, you know, to try to better understand the spruce grouse. And perhaps because they are difficult to study, we really don't know a lot about them, you know, anywhere. But particularly here in Minnesota, there just hasn't been much research done on how many are out there and exactly what their range is. According to Charlotte Roy, they're, you know, found pretty much throughout the Arrowhead, and then their range extends across, you know, kind of the northern counties about as far west as Red Lake. But within that relatively broad area, you know, how dense they are, how many we're actually talking about, it's not clear. The DNR does do, you know, a bag survey on rough grouse on a regular basis, so they have a good idea of how many rough grouse are harvested. The spruce grouse numbers vary a lot from year to year, and they're not, you know, huge numbers, nowhere near the number of rough grouse. So they know that they're out there. They're certainly a viable population of spruce grouse. They're not that common. And it's going to take some time probably it'll probably take several years of study here before we have a good sense of maybe how many are actually out there.
All right, Marshall, before we go, we got to talk the exciting part of this season. It's berry time. What are you seeing?
Oh, berries like you've never seen before. It's one of the best berry years I can recall. You know, and of course, this abundant rainfall we've had has helped. The berries are very plump and juicy this year. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, you know, for years, I mean, anybody who's familiar with blueberries knows that a lot of patches out there in the woods, you'll see blueberry plants But in a lot of cases, most years, there's just a handful of berries here and there. And there's big areas of blueberries that I never have bothered to pick at because there just weren't enough berries to even bend over for. And some even those places that have just been, you know, poor producers over the years, in many cases are just, the bushes are just laden with berries. So it's really an interesting phenomenon to see this year, the degree to which the blueberries have just exploded. And they're probably a little bit ahead of schedule. I mean, we've already picked, I know Jody and I have already picked probably 3 gallons of berries. And normally we're just kind of getting started about now. And they're it's the upland berries that are ripe now. Up in our area, it's kind of those rocky outcrops where you'll find good blueberries because it tends to be sunnier up there, and the blueberries like some sun. So those have been the good places to pick right now. They tend to ripen ahead of the swamp berries. And, you know, the best picking usually is later in the season when you get down into the swamp or the lower areas. But this year, I'm not sure we're going to be able to get into those areas. Our best secret spot, I'm not sure we'll even get there this year because it's usually pretty wet in there anyway. I'm guessing a fair chunk of it's underwater at this point, given how much rain we've had. So maybe content to just stay in the uplands this year, which is probably fine because there are plenty of berries to be had, that's for sure. And I should mention, too, the June berries. If you like June berries, they're really good this year, too. And, you know, a lot of folks who pick berries will tell you that if you kind of mix your blueberries and some June berries, they make a better pie if it's not all blueberries. Uh-huh. You know, blueberries, you cook blueberries, they tend to be, it tends to be really runny. But you put in about maybe one-third of the June berries, which are a little, they're not nearly as juicy, they're just more meaty, I guess. That pie is a lot thicker then.
Well, I think you have to prove that. You know where the KXC studios are, right?
There you go.
It's Marshall Helmberger, the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at thetimberjay.com. Marshall, thanks for being with us.
Happy to do it. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.